Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, how are you? Thursday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK and Sean Carey. Steve will be heading into the Sunbury Motors studio in just a few. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lots of ways to find us on the interweb, stevejonesshow.com. Also on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. You can drop us a line anytime. Our email, Steve Jones, all one word, stevejones@wkok.com. So with you live till 5 here on WKOK, then we'll have the late day news roundup, 5:06 with Sarah Benick, and that'll lead us up to Phillies baseball at 6:40 tonight, and first pitch 7:15. And that's with the Phillies and the St. Louis Cardinals. Yesterday, how about a one-game sweep for the Titans yesterday? 4-1 win in Baltimore. Conditions not all that great. But the Phillies are now at a place that they have not been at since the end of the 2011 season. 8 games over .500, currently at 24-16. And that's the start of a four-game weekend set tonight in St. Louis. Nick Pivetta fanning 11 in 7 innings yesterday to earn the win at Baltimore. Fun is something in Philadelphia that they really haven't experienced all that much the last 5 years in Busch Stadium. Phillies are just 5-13 under the Gateway Arch dating back to 2013. So we'll have that for you tonight here on WKOK. Vince Velasquez will start tonight for the Phillies. He's coming off a 6-3 win back on May the 10th against San Francisco, and he fanned a 12 over 6 innings, allowing 5 hits and 3 runs in the process. This will be Velasquez's second career start against the Cardinals. Lost his first outing back in August of 2016, giving up 5 runs, 7 hits, and 6 innings in a 9-0 defeat. So Phillies-Cardinals tonight here on WKOK. There is one day game in Major League Baseball going on now. About ready to wrap up. Bottom of the ninth, the Dodgers are shutting out the Miami Marlins by a score of 7-0. Hockey tonight, NHL playoffs continue in the Eastern Conference Final between the Washington Capitals and Tampa Bay Lightning. The Caps are up 2-1, looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead before the series shifts back to Tampa Bay over the weekend. Also this weekend, you've got the Preakness. Steve Bortstein from Fox Sports Radio. He was kind enough to join us a couple of weeks ago to preview the Derby. He was high on Justify back then. We'll see if Justify goes 2-for-2 in the Triple Crown. Preakness in Baltimore this weekend. So Steve Bortstein coming up. And also a little golf talk, Jason Sobel of ActionNetwork.com. He'll be joining us to wrap up the show at 4:35 today.
Looking forward to that. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Good.
Yes.
Yeah, the Phillies have been rolling along, which is good.
24-16, how about that?
Well, it's like, I was talking earlier today with somebody, like, oh, look at the Pirates. I said, the Pirates have played the worst schedule in Major League Baseball. I mean, you know, I mean, they're coming off another series with the White Sox, who, by the way, are sporting a whopping .257 winning percentage. Right? .257. All right? Now, you have to beat who's in front of you, so I get that. Yeah, I got that part.
I remember 2 years ago the Phillies got off to a really nice start, and it was right about this time in May 2 years ago. We had Scott Fransky on the show, and you know, he pretty much said, you know, enjoy it for all it's worth, because you know, they were, you know, the earlier stages of the rebuilding process back then. It's great that they're at 24-16 now.
Yeah, except but the Phillies, like you said. Except I think the Phillies are good.
Yeah.
The problem is the Pirates, which I think have played better than I thought they would, their schedule is terrible. I mean,
well, it just seems like the Phillies keep playing Miami and the Braves, and they've got another series. They got another series with the Braves not far away.
Right, and the Braves are good though.
Yeah,
that's the
are.
Difference. The
yeah.
Braves are good. See, the Pirates keep getting Detroit, the White Sox. Now they've got the Padres and the Reds. Now they did take one series where they swept the Cardinals early in the year. That was big. But when they faced the Nationals, they got swept. When they faced the Phillies, they got swept. When they, you know, when they took two out of three from Milwaukee, so that's really good. But I'm not buying in on what the Pirates are doing until they actually they've got the Cubs and the Cardinals for nine straight games. Once the Reds leave town next Thursday, now we'll find out what really is in the tank. Now we'll find out. I give them credit for doing what they've done so far. The Phillies, I think, are good. I think the Phillies are good. And they've got the right mix of veterans to go with their young players. Yeah. I mentioned the other day about Penn State playing DePaul in basketball and the Gavitt games. Now, these are set up by the conferences. So Penn State has nothing to do with this. The schools have nothing to do with it. And I think what they did this time with when it comes to Penn State did not get a good shake out of this. You have to go and you have to play DePaul. You have to go to Chicago November 15th. You got to win it. All right. I got that part. All right. You have, okay, that's the way it is. You have to go in there. You have to win it. All right. But what do you get for winning it? All right. You won a road game. Okay. But nobody's going to look at it later and go, oh, yeah, they went to DePaul and won. Now, here's the flip side. You lose it. Oh, you lost to DePaul. It's not a good... I mean, you're talking about a team at an RPI of 185 last year. KenPom, they were 99. Right? Wisconsin got Xavier. Now, Wisconsin, will they be a better team than they were last year? In my opinion, yes, they will be. Iverson's back, Hap's back, they're going to get Trice back, who missed almost all last season with an injury. They got Aleem Ford back, they got Davison back. I mean, Wisconsin's going to be a good team. All right? But they still won 15 games last year and didn't make the tournament of any kind, didn't make any postseason. Penn State won 26 games last year, and they've got Watkins back, they've got Stevens back, they've got Reeves back. All right, so it's not like Penn State doesn't have people back, and it isn't like they don't have NCAA tournament aspirations, because they do. Right, Penn State, so Wisconsin gets Xavier. Okay, of course, Michigan's going to play Villanova. Rematch of the national championship game. But here's the one that struck me more than anything else. I thought when this thing broke down, my opinion, I thought Penn State was going to get Seton Hall. Now, I knew it was going to be a road game, but I thought Penn State was going to get Seton Hall. NCAA tournament team, good matchup, it's on the road, okay, here we go. Nebraska got them. What? Nebraska got them. Let Nebraska go play Creighton, for goodness sakes.
I will say this, last week when I saw the trickle down on social media of the Gavitt Games matchups, I was surprised I didn't see Michigan State Xavier. I thought that had been a great matchup in November.
Michigan State has never played in the Gavitt Games.
I don't get that. Wondering why. Yeah, fourth straight year not in.
That I don't know. Now, part of it may be because they played in the Chicago Tip-Off Classic, right? So they've been involved in that. So it's not like they haven't, you know, because they end up playing Duke or Kansas or some, you know, somebody like that. So Michigan State normally goes out and plays a schedule. But they have not participated in the Gavitt Games yet. Remember, there are only 10 Big East teams, too. But I looked at that and I thought, you know what? Penn State did not get a good shake there. And I say that with all due respect to DePaul. You know, Kane, who played against Penn State as a freshman, I really liked his game, and it's turned out he's had a nice career. He's going to be a senior this year. Jalen Coleman Lands transferred from Illinois, so Penn State saw him for 2 years. They know how good he is. He's a good scorer. He's eligible this year to play. The Struck kid, who put his name into the NBA draft but didn't get invited to the combine. I mean, he's a guy who was a 1,000-point scorer in Division II, for goodness sakes. Goes to DePaul and has 13 20-point games last year. So he can score. So it's not like as if they don't have players. They just don't have a depth of players. But again, it's the perception. Doesn't matter whether these guys are any good or not. It's perception. And you're trying to, and I know it's November 15th. It's really early. It's a game that Penn State cannot afford to lose early in the season because they're going to need every single one that they can get. But I just thought that, you know, that they deserved a better impact game, which would have been somebody like a Seton Hall above everything else, and they didn't get it. So, and that's not Penn State's fault. I just felt like there were a couple of other programs that got a greater benefit of the doubt than Penn State did. That's how I looked at it. I asked myself, okay, why did Nebraska get Seton Hall? Why did Wisconsin get Xavier? Why didn't Penn State? Now, we'll see how it balances out with the ACC Challenge. That's still to be announced, and Penn State is expected to get, expected, it's not guaranteed, but it's expected that they'll get a home game out of it. The ACC today is proposing to expand the NCAA tournament to 72 teams. John Swofford said at the conclusion of the ACC spring meetings at Amelia Island, you know, so they never go to Grosse Pointe, Michigan.
They don't know what they're missing. Come on.
I think they might.
True.
Swofford said that the men's basketball coaches endorsed the proposal, citing more postseason opportunities for football teams than for basketball teams. Talk about bowl games. The idea of having two first fours, if you will, and possibly making the two first fours geographic. Jim Larrañaga of Miami said that expanding the NCAA tournament field would be good for several reasons, including unreasonable travel for West Coast teams to Dayton, Ohio. Remember, UCLA had to play right away this year, and they had to fly from Los Angeles. He says there are always bubble teams that could have and should have been invited that then go on a big run. You have to keep them on 68 of 351 make the team. That's 19%. 72%, 72 teams would make it 20%. That's not a huge increase when you compare it to how many football teams make a bowl game. So there's greater parity within the sport. Teams coming out of the first four have included VCU, which made the Final Four in 2011. Said Larrañaga said, with a 16 seed finally upsetting a number one, it's clear that there is greater parity and even greater excitement in watching the early round potential upsets. Swofford said that the league will propose specific rule changes, including widening the lane, resetting the shot clock to 20 seconds after an offensive rebound, and moving the three-point line back. You notice he didn't mention quarters. It's interesting, the first Big Ten, the first NIT game against Temple, I was like, the quarter thing. I sat back and went, oh, brother. When the game was over, you know, Penn State's won. You think about the game. Okay, what's going to be next? Okay, looks they're going to go play at Notre Dame next. Okay, you know. And then you finally settle in a little bit and you think, okay, what'd you think of the rules? Okay, well, let's go through the rules. The widening the lane. You want to know what I did not see one time in the NIT, in any NIT game, including the ones Penn State was involved in? No, at one time was anybody called for 3 seconds. Zero. Resetting the shot clock after an offensive rebound to 20 instead of 30. I said going into the NIT, I really liked it. And after going through the NIT, I can tell you I really like it. But you have to have the proper software on your game clocks to make it work. resetting the clock is not as easy as, okay, boom. It can be if you have the right software, but if you don't, at Penn State in the game against Temple, I was talking to Ange Montavino, and Ange told me, he said he had to hit that thing three times to get it to click down to 20 whenever that happened. And he says, and part of it, too, is when the ball hits the rim, it's an automatic reset, right? Except you have to wait a second to see who gets the rebound. If the defense gets the rebound, it's 30. If the offense gets the rebound, it's 20. So you do have to. So there is that issue. When Baylor played its opening NIT game at the Farrell Center, they had to do away with the 20 seconds on the offensive rebound because the software for the clock had not arrived yet. So if they're going to do that, everybody has to. And to me, if the NCAA is going to have a rule like this, they should be paying for the software. Get it into everywhere, and then go from there. Okay, so that's one. Widening the lane, I'm fine with. Resetting the shot clock 20, I'm fine with. Moving back the three-point line, I'll be honest with you, you know, after doing five NIT games, no big deal to me. These guys all can have long range now. But you notice the one he didn't bring up was the quarters. After the Temple game, I was like, I think I said in the show, I was like, yeah, the quarters, like, eh. But you know what? It's like anything else. You get used to it. Right? And after, okay, I got used. I mean, the next games, I didn't even think twice about it with Notre Dame, Marquette, Mississippi State, or Utah. Like, I didn't even really think about it. There's strategy involved in trying to score at the end of each quarter, getting two for ones, two for nones, things like that. But it's like anything, you can get used to it. You know, we're playing in the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, which, by the way, ended up bringing in $25,000 for the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. You know, when Craig hit, I was used to, you know, knowing that Craig's ball was going to be in the fairway. When the Chief hit on the back nine, I was used to being in the fairway. And when the suit hit, we knew there were more balls in the bag. So, I mean, you get used to everything, okay?
Can't put a price tag on peace of mind out on the fairway.
Can't put a price on the fact that there are more balls in the bag.
can't put a price tag on the chutter either, but that's another story.
All I know is that Steve Engel complained to us about Adam Purdy.
Duly noted. Yes.
Live
on this broadcast. Yes.
We are willing to make a trade.
It's still there.
Right?
Yeah.
And
50 weeks now, away to make it happen.
Now, I understand that probably Craig, the Chief, and I may have to come up with some cash to sweeten the deal. But I'm willing to seriously consider it because the other option is waivers.
Well, between now and then, 50 weeks from now, betting's going to be a little more widespread in PA, hopefully, so that could be one way to bring in the revenue.
That's all I can see is right now in Grantville, right? Up on the board, okay? Up on the board, NBA playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, chutter saves. You know,
making up for not being on yesterday. So
let me put it to you this way.
Sure.
Yeah. Being on the golf course with the suit feels like a pilot in a plane circling a fogged in airport. I mean, it's really.
Or in Hawaii right now, they're dealing with VOG, with a V.
I saw that. Oh, by the way, you know what's coming up this weekend? Besides the Preakness.
Yeah.
You know what else is coming up this weekend? And I heard it this morning, and I thought, oh, no. Pole position for the Indy 500.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Carburation Day. Or is that today?
I don't know.
Or they call bump day. They call it bump day, not carburation day. So.
This used to be the single most informed Indy 500 station in America.
I know.
Right? We have now fallen into place with everybody else. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. $25,000, by the way, raised at the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. We had said between $20,000 and $30,000. I think $25,000 qualifies. Congratulations to everybody involved. What a difference that makes in our area. And to the Purdy family and to Adam Purdy, Steve Engel, everybody. Thanks so much.
By the way, if we were on yesterday, we would have been able to have wished Adam a very happy birthday. Belated happy birthday to Adam Purdy.
You know, he could play golf on our team anytime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, I took a moment just to peruse what clubs he had in the bag. There was no chutter in.
Right. Not that you're on a quest to find one in his bag in the first place.
No, I was hoping there wasn't one because I thought, well, good, finally. A normal dude. All right. On this day, sports history, 1927, the Cubs beat the Boston Braves 4-3 in 22 innings. Yankees and Indians set a record on this date, 1953, when they combined to use 41 players in a game. 1968, Frank Howard of the then Washington Senators, now known as the Texas Rangers, hit his eighth home run in five games. This was a big day for the NFL, because it was on this day in 1969 that the Colts, Steelers, and Browns agreed to move from the NFL grouping to what was then going to become the AFC. They needed to balance because there were 16 NFL teams. There were 10 AFL teams. So they wanted to even it out at 13 apiece. Pittsburgh was able to convince Cleveland to move over with them, and then Baltimore said, yeah, we'll do it too. And that was big because it took a lot for those teams to say, well, what do I want to lead the NFC side? 1970, Hank Aaron, 3,000th career hit. 1973, Joe Ferguson of the Dodgers hit the 6,000th home run in Dodgers history. And 1998, David Wells of the Yankees became the 13th player in the modern era of baseball to pitch a perfect game. And that is this day in sports history. Preakness, the run for the Black-Eyed Susans coming up Saturday, Pimlico, just outside of Baltimore. With the Kentucky Derby, our two experts, Dick Girardi, of course, as always. Dick will join us tomorrow. And Steve Bornstein joins us now from Louisville. Steve, welcome back. It's great to hear you again.
Appreciate the time very much. Thank you.
All right. Let's talk about Justify. You pointed out correctly that Justify, the one area, is that he had run against limited fields in terms of the size of the field. So this will be more of a comfort zone for him. When you watched the Derby, what really stuck out to you about him?
Well, I mean, you know, having run against small fields, you don't know how horses are going to deal with having a great deal many around them. But what Justify did was basically eliminate a lot of those horses by getting that perfect trip. And that's a term we use a lot in horse racing, where the horse that is supposed to win has pretty much everything his own way. He sat right behind one speed horse pretty much for the first six furlongs of the race, put that one away, and then opened up on the field around the far turn and didn't have a straw in his path really down the stretch. So he really still hasn't faced overcoming adversity. Now, you can talk about the off track. He had run on an off track earlier in his career in his second lifetime start in Southern California. So he'd already done that. He'd already been basically wire to wire or close to the pace in all of his three races prior to the Derby. So one could argue he still hasn't faced that kind of adversity yet. So really what stuck out to me was the professionalism he showed. You know, a lot of times horses with that little experience, you never know what they're going to do. They may freak out in front of all those people under those conditions, whatever. He didn't do that, and he looked very good, I thought, drawing off in the lane.
You mentioned running in the slop and a perfect trip. That horse broke out of the gate. Now, that was the only horse I watched break. I wanted to see how he'd break. I mean, Steve, it was perfect. I mean, I'm talking like right. It's almost like the sea parted for him.
Oh, yeah, and that's what you wanted. If you were a fan of Justify at the Windows, that's exactly the kind of trip you wanted him to get. I was sitting with some friends watching the race, and about halfway down the backstretch, I said he's going to win the Kentucky Derby because it was over. I mean, there was no one that was really making up any significant ground. Everyone else that I thought were going to be major contenders or that had been hyped up as major contenders were not getting that kind of trip. Mendelsohn had been eliminated pretty much at the start of the race. The horse that I was kind of a fan of called Audible was too far back, and clearly he didn't like all the mud in his face. Good Magic was still going to make his run, but by the time he got going, Justify was already in full stride.
All right. I think as expected, a lot of horses were not going to make the second race, and it turns out, besides Justify, there's only one other. Were you surprised that Good Magic decided to give it a run and not wait for the Belmont?
Well, I think if you're Good Magic, and there is one other from the Kentucky Derby, that's Bravazo, drawn on the outside for Wayne Lucas. I think the reason for Good Magic to come back is kind of similar. I mean, he didn't really have a bad trip. He didn't get injured. He wasn't being rushed back. And I think if you look at some of his past performance lines, you know, he's a horse who's obviously fresh. And I thought he ran his best race, maybe of his career, in the Kentucky Derby. So long as he came out of the race in good order, I see no reason for him not to come back. Chad Brown's an aggressive trainer. Chad Brown's a smart trainer. He does what's right for the horse, and he knows if the horse is in good condition. And if you don't run in the Preakness Stakes, then essentially you wait 3 weeks to run in the Belmont. That's another 5 weeks between races. This horse is obviously in good form right now. Clearly he's the second best horse in the race, just on past performance lines. So there's no reason not to come after him. And obviously, you know, that was his only race over a sloppy racetrack. And with the exception of Justify, he was the second best horse. He was the best horse in the race, with the exception of, obviously, the Kentucky Derby winner. So there's no reason to think he wouldn't handle a sloppy course, which he is likely to get once again Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, you mentioned Bravazo. Bravazo's been sixth and eighth in his last two outings. Were you surprised at this, or did maybe the distance make a difference?
Well, Wayne Lucas is a master at knowing how to get a horse to turn around. Wayne Lucas has been doing this for years now, so not really a surprise. I think it's more intriguing that Luis Contreras, who rode Bravazo in his most recent start in the Kentucky Derby, is not riding back on Saturday afternoon. Instead, he's going to be riding aboard Sporting Chance, who was fourth in his most recent start in the Pat Day Mile. So I think that says a little bit there. I know that Wayne Lucas and Luis Saez have teamed up before, but I think that's a bigger sign. If you're wagering on the horse, maybe you look at the fact that the last three riders who have been aboard Bravazo, even in those two victories back in the Risen Star Stakes back in February, and then prior to that in the allowance race at Oaklawn Park, neither of those riders are getting on board, and I think that's a telltale sign.
Interesting 30-1 in Diamond King, who's won four times and brings fresh legs into the race and also might be a horse that around the turn may catch somebody. What do you think of that horse?
He's interesting also in the fact that his most recent wins have been at Laurel, which is about 30 miles right. south of Baltimore, right near Pimlico. So he's kind of the local horse, and I think that's more the angle you're looking for. He'll be close to the pace. He figures to be, you know, sent along early. Certainly his pedigree suggests he shouldn't have a problem with the distance. The fact that it's his first race at Pimlico for almost every single one of these. In fact, for all of them, it is going to be their first race over Pimlico's main track, so that shouldn't be an issue. He'll handle the sloppy track, too. His pedigree suggests that the sloppy track wouldn't be an issue. I would expect to see him prominently positioned early on in the race under jockey Javier Casiano, one of the top riders in the country.
This is Bob Baffert's fifth Kentucky Derby horse. The previous four did go on and win the Preakness. What is it about his ability to be in that? Now, obviously, you have to have a great horse, so let's start with that. The horse has to be terrific. But what is it about how he trains a horse that when he gets a sniff of something, he can turn a horse around in 2 weeks and still have it be fresh enough?
Baffert's an aggressive trainer, and you know it's the old axiom of you strike when the fire is hot, and Baffert's been exceptional at that. And you know, a lot of people are going to question the fact that this horse didn't race as a two-year-old. Some questions came up about this horse's I don't want to say physical ability, but some questions came up about this horse after the Derby when it appeared he was favoring his right leg a little bit when he was walking around the shed row afterwards. There's a reason the horse didn't race at two. Obviously, there was something amiss with this horse when he was a two-year-old that prevented him from having a race as a juvenile. So maybe those issues are still there. Maybe those issues are still prominent. But as far as Baffert's concerned, Baffert is that guy who strikes when the iron is hot. He keeps the pressure on. And if you're that horse who's that good right now, then you come back to those 2 weeks. And even if he didn't win the Derby, unless he had run badly, you know, I think you would have seen him back here because, again, Baffert knows what he has. And Baffert's known what he's had for some time with Justify. He knew it back in January just before this horse's debut. So I think he knows what he's got. I think I don't think we've seen the bottom of him yet. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. Does that mean he wins necessarily? No, but it means that he's obviously, you know, well-regarded. He's the 1-2 morning line favorite. I think the test will come in the Belmont. Even if he does win on Saturday, the test will come in the Belmont because you will see a number of these horses who didn't come back for the Preakness. You're going to see Audible. You're going to see a couple of horses that might not have fired their best shot in the Derby. You'll see them back in the Belmont Stakes, and that will be the true test of whether or not he's a champion or not.
All right, so Steve, how would you like to play it? And what's your initial feel on this particular day is how you'd like to play it out Saturday?
You know, if the rain wasn't going to be a factor, which it's going to be, then I would have looked for a flip-flop. I would have looked for Good Magic to overtake Justify. But I think the rain will be a factor. It's supposed to be a downpour for much of the next several days there. I imagine they will do all they can to make that track as fast as possible. But if the rains are going to be a factor, then I think that Justify wins again. And a lot of people will say that, you know, well, he's going into the Belmont with two sort of asterisks next to his name. He hasn't won on a fast track yet in either of the two Triple Crown races. You still got to show up. You still have to run your race. I think if it were a dry track, I would have looked for a flip-flop, but I do think Justify will win the Preakness, and again, then that will start the fever and the fervor of will we get another Triple Crown winner, and ironically enough, it'll be, if it does happen, it would be the first time in racing history that it would be the same trainer winning back-to-back Triple Crowns. Of course, American Pharoah back in 2015, trained by Bob Baffert, so it would be quite an achievement, and certainly something that we'd be excited about as horse racing prognosticators and what have you to be dealing with that for the next few weeks.
Well, it's always a pleasure for us to talk with you. Thanks so much, my friend. It's great to hear your insight on the other end there.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you.
Steve Bornstein joining us, Fox Sports Louisville. Tomorrow, Dick Girardi's take on the Preakness. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. I guess Mark Packer had made some sort of comment about the Penn State Pitt series, and so one of our listeners, I guess, sent him something from our show that I don't know if Mark listened to it or not. I've been on Pack's show before about the Penn State Pitt series, which, by the way, that's going to be an 8 o'clock kickoff. It'll be in prime time from Heinz Field, because the Pirates-Marlins game was already moved to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so that opened the door. That's the only kickoff announced so far. And you know, there are a lot of people wondering, you know, will game day be there? Like, I'm sitting there like, does it matter? But that's just me. This certain things a lot of people care about, I don't care as much about. But that's... it's going to be interesting to see what they do with game day. Because we all know that they were ahead of the curve when it comes to putting lines out and doing a show around the line. And for me, I mean, I'm never really that crazy about, you know, as I've said many times, I said, look, it's your money, you can do with it whatever you want. But I've always, of course, I'm not naive enough not to know that people don't gamble on sports. You know, believe me, I've been in enough stadiums where a team scored a field goal and the stadium booed. And you're like, it takes you a second to sink in. Why are they not happy? They just scored. Oh, wait a minute. It didn't put them over the line.
And when I think of ESPN and lines, I always think of Hammer and Hank Goldberg at about 10 of 11 on Sunday mornings. He would do throw in his lines before they would go to their Sunday. Ironically enough, it'd be on SportsCenter. It wouldn't be on the NFL Countdown show. But it'll be interesting to see within a year if ESPN will have like a full-blown half-hour betting show.
Oh, I would think so. If it's especially, look, they're sitting, where's ESPN located? If they're sitting in Connecticut, I'm telling you right now, Connecticut's going to be legal like that. I would not doubt that before the NFL season comes up, you'll be able to bet on NFL games or college football games in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Mississippi, Delaware, and probably Connecticut, and maybe New York. So why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? If it's part of the landscape, because remember, before it was part of the Nevada landscape, and it was a part of the offshore landscape. But I want to go back to something I mentioned earlier. Remember, what was the first question I asked Dustin on Tuesday? For the leagues, where's the leverage? What are they going to do? What's the NFL going to do if you don't impose a 1% integrity tax that goes to us? What are you going to do? I'm going to move the Eagles and the Steelers someplace else? Really? Of course they're not going to bring that up. They're not going to move the Eagles. They're not going to move the Steelers. Where's their leverage? They don't have any leverage. And they know it. That's why, have you noticed the tact that everyone has taken since the ruling came down? NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, Roger Goodell, NFL, Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball. Gary Bettman's kind of followed the NFL's lead on this so far. But they've all said the same thing. A national bill from Congress. See, if they can lobby one major entity to then make it a sweeping where everybody has to accept it, that's the payoff for them. Because going state by state, you're going to get a lot of reaction like the NBA got in West Virginia. In West Virginia, they didn't put it in the bill. They finally had a long talk with the governor, and the governor said he'd support it, and the legislature sat there and said, why?
state-by-state regulation is going to be the key. I'm just really curious to see which American professional sports franchise will come out and say, blank, blank, the official betting provider of our team.
Well, no, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
No. You can expect casinos to be major. This is where the leagues are going to benefit initially. Casinos are going to be major players in advertising, and casinos might be major players in naming rights. What's to prevent it? If it's legal in your state, what's to prevent it?
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.